Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Mitchell of the Trust, our Apostolic Sanitarian Congregation on South of Charlottetown, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is January 28, 2018, or the Sheep at 12, 2021. We will start our first service with a song today entitled, Calvary Covers It All. That the world can impart was the message that came to my heart. Now that Yahshua alone for my sin did atone, and Calvary covers it all. Calvary covers it all. My past, the sin and stain, my guilt and despair, Yahshua took on Him there, and Calvary covers it all. The stripes that He bore, and the thorns that He wore, tell His mercy and love evermore. And my heart bowed in shame as I called on His name, and Calvary covers it all. Calvary covers it all. My past, the sin and stain, my guilt and despair, Yahshua took on Him there, and Calvary covers it all. How matchless a grace, when I looked in the face of this Yahshua, my crucified Lord. My redemption complete, I've been found at His feet, and Calvary covers it all. Calvary covers it all. My past, the sin and stain, my guilt and despair, Yahshua took on Him there, and Calvary covers it all. How blessed the thought that my soul by Him bought shall be His in the glory on high. For with gladness and song I'll be one of the throng, and Calvary covers it all. Calvary covers it all. My past, the sin and stain, my guilt and despair, Yahshua took on Him there, and Calvary covers it all. We're in 1 TG 49. It says, what is religion? Does it profit both now and hereafter? That's the name of our study today. 1 TG 49. B.T. Holliff gave this text of address back there in June 12, 1947. Okay, it says, what is religion? If humanity needs to know any one thing about another, it is the answer to these two questions. What is religion? Does it profit now and hereafter? Many think that religion consists of going to church of praying, of having good morals, not stealing, not killing, not playing games, not gambling, not attending shows, not eating certain things, of doing or of not doing this, that, and the other. Others think religion is nothing more than some kind of a sociological order, and that the church is a place in which to get acquainted, etc., etc. Let us see. For Yahshua was comforted, or was confronted, by the rich young ruler who said unto him, I have kept the commandment. What yet must I do to enter into life eternal? Here follows the answer. Luke 18:22. Now when Yahshua heard these things, he said unto him, Yet lackest thou one thing. Sell all that thou hast, and distribute unto the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. To understand this scripture, we must read another one along with it. John 3:1-3. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came to Yahshua by night and said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from Yahweh, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except Yahweh be with him. For Yahshua answered and said unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of the Yahweh. Both the rich young man and Nicodemus were rulers, and though Nicodemus might not have been as rich as was the young man, he nevertheless was not poor. But why was the one asked to distribute his riches to the poor and the other told to be born again? Why should not both pay the same price for salvation? Here are the reasons. To avoid being seen in the company of Yahshua, Nicodemus came to him, not by day, but secretly by night. Whereas the young ruler came to Yahshua not only openly by day, but also while a multitude were with Yahshua. For the rich young ruler's basic hindrance, therefore, was his wealth. And Nicodemus' basic hindrance was his pride. Plainly then, the one's ailment called for one kind of treatment, and the other's ailment called for another kind of treatment. Yahshua never asked anyone to take his religion, but he asked them to follow him to be one of his disciples. The rich young ruler could not follow Yahshua because his heart was centered upon his own riches. And Nicodemus could not follow Yahshua because he was too proud to be seen in the company of the unpopular and hated Yahshua, followed by the humble fisherman. To remove the hindrances, the one had to get rid of his riches, and the other had to get rid of his pride. To eradicate pride, one must be born again, must become a new man. But to eradicate the love of money, one must give his money to those who really need it. For the scriptures bear a record that Abraham was very rich, yet he is called the friend of Yahweh. Riches in themselves, therefore, can be a blessing, although they more often become a curse. Pride, however, is never good. Remember that the devil finds in every one of us at least one loophole. Whatever that loophole be, it must be done away with, be it riches or be it pride. Of course, not all are rich and tied to their wealth, but everyone can be tied to himself, the old man, and not all need give up riches, but all need cut loose from the old man who gets them into everything but what they ought to be in. Let us read again from John chapter 3, verse 4-8. Nicodemus saith unto him, How can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter the second time into his mother's womb and be born? Yahshua answered, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born of the water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of Yahweh. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit. Marvel not that I said unto thee, ye must be born again. The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh, and whither it goeth. So is every one that is born of the Spirit. Nicodemus' acknowledgement that Yahshua was the Son of Yahweh made his case exceedingly bad. Knowing who Yahshua was, he should not have been ashamed to be seen in his company. Nor should he have been afraid of his enemies. He should have considered it a privilege to associate with the Son of Yahweh, with a heavenly being. But inasmuch as Nicodemus was ashamed to be seen with him, and was proud to be with the Pharisee, he needed to bury the old man and to arise in the newness of life, needed to be born again. To the question, how can a man be born when he is old? Yahshua answered, except a man be born of the water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter the kingdom of Yahweh. Nicodemus had to be baptized, had to publicly acknowledge Yahshua as the Son of Yahweh and receive the Spirit of the truth. And the illustration, the wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh, and whither it goeth, so is every one that is born of the Spirit. Definitely points out that to really know what it is to be born of the Spirit is to have the experience of being one of his disciples, of being filled with the Holy Spirit, and of proclaiming his truth. Yahshua comparing his followers, those who are born again with the wind, makes this fact still clearer. For if his disciples are like the wind, if no one knows where they come from and where they go to, then the only way to find out is to become one with them. For Yahshua to become one with us, we had to be born again. He had to become an earthly man. And for us to be one with him, we have to be born again, born of the Spirit. The difference is that Yahshua was first born a spiritual, a divine being, and second a human being. Whereas we are first born human beings and second spiritual beings. Prophetically speaking of Yahshua's birth, the prophet Isaiah wrote, Isaiah 66:7, Before she travailed, she brought forth. Before her pain came, she was delivered of a man-child. For the Jewish church, the church into which and by which Yahshua was born, inspiration declares, neither travail nor had pain. That is, she felt neither need of nor burden for a Savior, and yet in spite of it, he was born. The speaking of the children that are to make up the kingdom, we read, Isaiah 66:8, Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such a thing? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day? Or shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. So although the Jewish church in the Yahshua's day travailed not, yet she brought forth the Son of Yahweh. But when Zion travailed, she brings forth all her children at once, a whole nation, a miracle, and each instant. Now, how may Zion travail? Let us turn to the natural realm. In nature, a mother carries a child, then travails and gives birth to it. How else, then, in the spiritual realm, can Zion travail without first carrying her children before they are born? To be specific, when one joins the church, she is pregnant with him, so to speak. When she is thus carrying her children, then they shall all be born at once. they shall all at once receive their second birth, the birth here mentioned. And as inspiration makes it clear that they must be born again, they all at the outset must be the same, be in the same state of the mind as was the Nicodemus, ashamed to be seen in the company of present truth believers, ashamed to be associated with the believers of the unpopular truth. Plainly, then, our efforts to reach the people with the message of a second birth shall not be in vain. Zion shall bring forth all her children, as it were, in one day, and that is why we cannot be driven to despair or to discouragement. We are assured that the revival and reformation will take place among all Yahweh's people, that his word will not return unto him void. There's that revival and reformation we've been talking about that has to happen before the 144,000 can come forth. Now, who could the children be? To be children of Zion, they must someday stand on Zion. They are therefore none other than the first fruits, of whom the Revelator says, "And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written in their foreheads." Revelation 14:1. From the scriptures it is now clearly seen that in this instance, when one joins the church becomes pregnant with that member. Thus it is that from the time one becomes a member of the church until the time he is born again, he is spiritually developing for the hour of his second birth. Then after he is born again, he is still to keep on growing until he becomes a full-grown, mature spiritual being, a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of Yahshua, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing. According to this state of being, no one has as yet reached, but the time is now at hand when a multitude shall reach it. For it says to Yahshua, Isaiah 66:9, "Shall I bring to the birth and not cause to bring forth?" saith to Yahshua. "Shall I cause to bring forth and shut the womb?" saith thy Elohim. For the scripture endeavors to remove all doubt. Let us believe the Yahshua and know for certain that the time for this particular new birth is here, and that the Yahshua can and will make it possible regardless how it may appear unto us. From this study we see that religion is not made up of musts and don'ts, that no one is to be tied to a man, but to Elohim's ever unfolding truth. That religion means to be following the Yahshua and to be doing those things which he leads one to do, that from the time one accepts Yahshua as his Savior, from that very time he is to begin to grow spiritually. First, to be born again, then to become a full-grown spiritual being, not all at once, but to be growing daily. To reach such a high state of the perfection, one must therefore be perfecting himself daily and be in keeping with the truth of Yahweh, that each spark of the truth might add unto the amount of the spiritual growth the season requires, or else one will fall behind in reaching a spiritual maturity. Only thus can one be reaping all of the benefits which religion affords. No religion is not something extra, something optional. It is something which everyone must have. A true and up-to-date religion is something as essential as the eyes in your head. For example, let me take you through the stream of time, beginning with Noah. His religion not only saved him and his family from drowning in the terrible flood, but also made him become the progenitor of the world after the flood. Yes, the progenitor of our world. The world in his day, though perished because it felt no need of an up-to-date religion, no need of the present truth. What a shame. What nonsense for one to try to get along without religion, without Yahweh's counsel, and without the message of the hour. Page 10, Time of Greeting, number 49. Let us take a look at another highlight in the Bible history. For the mother of Moses believed in up-to-date religion. She believed that the time had come for the deliverance of the Hebrew race, and she did all she could to make it possible. When she saw that she could no longer hide her infant son from the hand of Pharaoh, she let her religion do the rest. The results were great. Not only did she receive her son again in her arms, forever saved from being thrown into the Nile, but also a guarantee for his support, education, and all the best Egypt could afford were paid from Pharaoh's treasury. The right hand of religion, you see, does great things. 80 years later, Moses' religion led the whole Hebrew nation from the brickyards of Pharaoh to the Red Sea. The sea parted for their sake, and as soon as they passed through, he closed in on their taskmasters. What a deliverance, what a victory. Moreover, as those millions of men, women, and children, also their cattle, came into that forbidding desert place where there was neither food nor water, religion made the rocks gush with streams and the clouds drop down a manna, not for a day nor for a month, but for 40 long years. Then the miracle of the Red Sea was repeated at the River Jordan, and the emancipated brickmakers became prophets, kings, and priests. Notwithstanding all these great happenings, when they became careless and indifferent, when they felt no need of the prophets, no need of present truth, no need of meat in due season, they again became slaves and captives. That is why we need the right kind of religion. That is why we need to stick to religion and to grow with it. The Jews were taken captive and carried into Babylon. Nevertheless, those who were faithful to their religion were well taken care of even in their captivity. Daniel, for instance, rather than serving as a slave, was instead treated as a lord, and was at last made a ruler by both the Chaldeans and the Medo-Persians. And when he was for spite thrown into the lion's den, he was spared, while his enemies were eaten up by the wild beast. When the three Hebrews for the faithfulness to their religion were thrown into the fiery furnace, the Son of Yahweh came and rescued them, and not a hair of their heads perished. Their enemies, though, were burned to death, but the Hebrews were made rulers in the kingdom. Gideon had to win a war after recruiting 22,000 soldiers. He was told that they were too many. Consequently, the time killers were removed, and finally, there were the 300 left to fight against a multitude that covered the plain. In spite of this small army, Gideon did win the war overnight, and without the loss of a man, religion, brother, sister, when lived up to, is a paying proposition. All could have been Daniels and Gideons, yet even the Jews of today could have been something, but what are they? A nation hated by all the people in the world, a nation without a king, without a flag, without a land, the only such nation on earth. Now, let me tell you of an experience that is strictly personal and news to most of you. So he goes in there. Says, several years ago while I was crossing one of the busy streets of Los Angeles, California, a woman from my left drove squarely into me. She then became so nervous that she could not stop her car, but kept going for a half a block. The car, though, did not tip me over. An unseen hand carried me ahead of it. And when the car stopped right at the alley which crossed the street, I stopped too. By that time, hundreds of spectators, including news reporters and three motor cops, had gathered around the car. If they found no one lying in the street, dead or wounded, they then decided that the victim must have been pinned under the car. When I told them that it was I who had been hit, they wondered, as I told them that I was not hurt. And as I refused to be taken to the hospital, they made me raise up my hands and legs, and they asked dozens of questions. The pencil on my coat pocket had been crushed by the impact of the car into about a dozen pieces, but my ribs were untouched. Then one from among the crowd said, "He must be made of rubber." Religion, you see, is better than an insurance policy. From our study, we perceive that Yahweh's power that protected life, even in the fiery furnace and in the lion's den, is still at work. That Yahweh is still as much interested in his people today as he was in Daniel's or in any other day. We therefore need an up-to-date religion every day. We cannot afford to be without it, no, not even for a moment. Time of truth not only saves our souls for eternity, but it protects us from day to day. It supplies our needs today and gives us hope for hereafter. There is safety in nothing else, and faith in the Yahweh is our only peace of mind, especially in this day and age. Religion obviously is profitable not only for hereafter, but certainly for today as well. Do not play the fool by trying to get along without it. Okay, that ends number 48, Time of Greeting, Volume 1. Let's go on into number 49. Life is but what we make it. Okay, it says that July 1947, V.T. Holliff gave this message. To find out that life is really what we make it, I shall bring to attention seven examples, beginning in Noah's day and ending in our day. Example number one. Noah was commanded to build an ark and to tell the world that a flood was to cover the earth, that only those who would get into the ark would escape alive. 120 years later, the animals were strangely seen to march two and two into the ark. Noah and his family also went in, while the rest of the world laughed and ridiculed. But when the rain began to pour, the situation ceased to be funny. Those outside the ark cried, mourned, pled, but all perished as fools only because they had failed to give heed to the present truth, had failed to feed on the meat in due season. What folly! What disaster! One would think that after the deluge, the world would have had a great respect for religion and for the prophets of Yahweh. But that was not the case. The antediluvians did not believe Noah's prediction that there was to be a flood, so they refused to go into the ark. But the flood came, and they perished. The post-diluvians did not believe his prediction that there was not to be another flood, so they set about to build the Tower of Babel. But when Yahweh saw the tower skyrocketing, he blasted the top of it and confounded the builders' language. That is, he blotted their own language from their minds and carved into them the languages of today. Thus, he caused the birth of various races and languages, which we today find even in the remotest parts of the earth. It was not Yahweh's purpose that the people should stack themselves in the plains of Shinar, but that they should spread out and replenish the earth, and so when they refused to obey his command, he gave them the next best he had for them, and that they had to obey. Man's work, independent of and contrary to Yahweh's, you see, is certain to meet with disaster. A house that is built on sand cannot survive a storm, and no man can possibly defeat Elohim's purpose for man. Do not make a fool of yourselves by trying. It takes years in the schools of men to learn a language, but in the school of Yahweh it takes but a moment. He can blot out one language from man's brains and carve in another, and at the same time change the features of his face and the color of his skin. Yes, Yahweh can do all this more quickly than a dentist can pull a tooth. But whether a change be made for better or for worse all depends upon the individual. Example number 2. Nebuchadnezzar was given a dream. Being troubled with it, he summoned the wise men of his realm to tell him the interpretation of it. They came, but there was nothing that they could do. At last Daniel was brought before the king, and after hearing the king's story of the dream, Daniel said in 4:24, 4:26, and 4:28, "This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which is come upon my master the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over thee, till thou knowest the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, the kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule." It came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar. The king heard the interpretation of it, and he understood the decree. Nevertheless, he was not willing to admit that there was one greater than he. Then it came to pass that Daniel 4:29-30, at the end of the 12th month, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. For the king spake and said, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" What a statement to make after having heard Yahweh's decree, for the king had yet to learn that Yahweh rules the nations, sets up kings, and disposes kings. Let us now hear Yahweh's answer to the king's folly. Daniel 4:31-33. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven, saying, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, unto thee it is spoken, for the kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and 7 times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will." The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagles' feathers, and his nails like birds' claws. Some, even to this day, do not realize that Yahweh rules, that men are not independent of him, although they are permitted to choose whether or not to serve him. It was not necessary for the Chaldean king to live with the beasts of the field, but as he could not learn his lesson by words in the easy way, he was removed from his palace and put into a corral, there to learn by experience in the hard way. in the end of 7 years after he had graduated, so to speak, from Yahweh's school of hard knocks, the king walked back into his palace and said, Daniel 4:34-37, "And at the end of the days I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me. And I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according unto his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, What doest thou? At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom. Mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom. And excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are in the truth and his ways in the judgments, and those that walk in the pride he is able to abase. Through pride and disloyalty to Yahweh, and Nebuchadnezzar made life miserable for himself, but at last he did awake. Example number 3. Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom continued until the reign of his grandson, Belshazzar. Belshazzar knew his grandfather's history and his experience with Yahweh, but he failed to profit by it. He made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and commanded that the vessels which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple in Jerusalem be brought to the feast, so that the king himself and his princes, wives, and concubines might drink therefrom. As soon as this revelry took place, there came forth fingers of a man's hand, which wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. Belshazzar was greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Then was Daniel brought before the king, and Daniel emphatically declared, Daniel 5:18-31, "O thou king, the Most High Yahweh gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom, and majesty, and glory, and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would he set up, and whom he would he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in the pride, he was disposed from his kingly throne, and he took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High Yahweh ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Yahweh of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee. And thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the Yahweh in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified." Then was a part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written: "Many, many tekel upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Many. Yahweh hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it." Okay, tekel. "Thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez. Thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians." Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with the scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius the Median took the kingdom, and being about 62 years old. What a difference there would have been in the scroll of history if Belshazzar had profited by the priceless lesson which his grandfather had learned. Yes, what a difference it would have made. This is a needful lesson for us all, kings and peasants alike. Example number 4. The Chaldean Empire became a Medo-Persian Empire, not because the Medes and the Persians were stronger and mightier, but because Yahweh had so decreed. Let us see, Isaiah 45:1. Thus saith Yahshua unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. This prophecy made its fulfillment to 2017, 1 year ago. Cyrus, under whose command the Medo-Persian army marched into Babylon, had not yet been born when the prophet Isaiah wrote of him. But Yahweh remembered his promise, and when Belshazzar felt perfectly secure on the night of the revelry and fatal debauchery, Yahweh opened before Cyrus the two-leaved gates and made possible the capture of the kingdom. There the Medes and the Persians met Daniel and his companion, who called Cyrus' attention to the scriptures, which not only predicted his victory, but even foretold his name. Having seen and felt the power of Yahweh, Cyrus was moved to decree. Ezra 1:2-11. Thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, the Yahweh Elohim of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he hath charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. This is what's going on right now. Donald Trump has already made the decree to Jerusalem already. Who is there among you of all his people? His Elohim be with him. And let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of Yahweh Elohim of Israel. He is the Elohim, which is in Jerusalem. And whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, let the men of his place help him with silver and with gold and with goods and with beasts, beside the freewill offering for the house of Yahweh that is in Jerusalem. Then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites, with all them whose spirit Yahweh had raised to go up to build the house of Yahweh which is in Jerusalem. And all they that were about them strengthened their hands with vessels of the silver, with gold, with goods, and with beasts, and with precious things, besides all that was willingly offered. Also Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels of the house of Yahweh, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem, and had put them in the house of his gods. Even those did Cyrus king of Persia bring forth by the hand of Mithridat, the treasurer, and numbered them under Sheshbazzar, the prince of Judah. And this is the number of them: 30 charges of gold, 1,000 charges of silver, 29 knives, 30 basins of gold, silver basins of a second sort, 410, and other vessels, 1,000. All the vessels of gold and of silver were 5,400. All these did Belshazzar bring up with them of the captivity that were brought up from Babylon unto Jerusalem. It is not difficult to see that if the rules of the Medo-Persian Empire had continued to rule in the same spirit as Cyrus, the kingdom would have stood until this day. That kingdom, though, gave way to Grecia, Grecia to Rome, and Rome to the nations of today. Plain enough it is to see that the kingdom of today still stands because Yahweh has purposed it so. They're growing more and more independent of Yahweh will sooner or later bring the end of them too. For looking down the stream of time, down to the kingdoms of today, which are depicted by the feet and toes of the great image, the Spirit of the Truth wrote, and whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of the potter's clay, and part of the iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron. Forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were part of the iron and part of the clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. That whereas thou sawest iron mixed with the miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in peace and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Elohim hath made known unto the king which shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel 2:41-45. Rather than merging into the kingdom of Yahweh, they will have to be destroyed. Example number 5. Now let us see what benefit the kingdoms and nations reaped from coming in contact with the church. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, who came in contact with the church, make up the civilized world of today. Look at the nations and peoples, the heathen, in the somewhat isolated place of the earth, who were not so fortunate as to meet the church as early as the other nations. Still further, look at those who are still more isolated in the remotest parts of the earth, who have had no contact with the church, not until just recently. Most of them are but just little better than animals, not only in intelligence, but even in progress. The people who were fortunate enough to be the closest to the religion of Yahshua are, you will find, the most intelligent, the most prosperous. England, for example, who translated the Bible and published and scattered it throughout the world under all peoples and languages, became the greatest of the nations in its time. Then the United States, but a sister nation to the English Empire, who less than 2 centuries ago founded its government upon the principles of the Bible and inscribed on its dollar, "In Yahweh we trust," and who also established the American Bible Society. And but a comparatively few years became the greatest of nations, as did the Hebrews in their day. On the other hand, those who turned against the religion of the Bible were left desolate. Their blessings became a curse to them. They hated Jews, for whom there is no spot on earth, are the best example. Germany, who led out in the Reformation, but who turned back from it, has reaped a sorrowful harvest too. And what is true with the nation is just as true with the individual's homes and families and communities. If you will take a little time to observe, you will see this law of the blessing and curses in the demonstration everywhere without exception. The world was founded upon religion, and you can rest assured that when religion disappears from the earth, the world will disappear with it. Those who fall in love with the truth will find that blessings will reciprocally fall in love with them. Let us read 2 Thessalonians 2:8-12. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Yahshua shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause Yahweh shall send them strong delusions, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned, who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. We see that if we do not fall in love with the truth, deception is inevitable. No one, none are deceived by coming in contact with air, for we are in contact with it anyway, from the time that we are born to the time we die. But everyone who does not love the truth is sure to be deceived, regardless what he may do to avoid it. And those who are satisfied with the truth of yesterday, who are not looking for fresh truth for today, from the throne of Yahweh, not looking for the meat in due season, such ones will find themselves in as terrible a predicament as did the Jews spewed out. Deuteronomy 30:15-19. See, I have set before thee this day life and good and death and evil. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. Example number 6. If we fail to profit by what Yahweh tells us, we shall fail as badly as, if not worse, as any who have failed before us. I think some of you who have had personal contact with Yahweh know these things through the experiences of your own. Doubtless you have found that you cannot long prevent explosion while keeping fire and gunpowder in the same room, that you cannot serve the devil and yet have peace and security. Let me illustrate this by an actual incident. A certain man dreamed that a horse killed him by kicking him. To safeguard his life, he ever after kept his distance from all horses. Nevertheless, one windy day as he was walking down the street, he passed a blacksmith's establishment, in front of which was hanging a sign with a horseshoe painted on it. The sign suddenly fell on his head and he died from the impact. We can no more avoid the consequences of sin and of isolation from Yahweh than could the dreamer avoid death by dodging it. We never know what the day will bring forth, and we cannot afford to isolate ourselves from Yahweh even for a moment. Neither can we say definitely that we will or will not do this, that or the other. Example number 7. Some years ago, while in Europe, I heard that one of my cousins had left for America. I then said to myself, poor cousin, I will never leave home and go to live anywhere as far away as America for any reason. But about that time, I, along with others, was falsely accused of conspiracy. It was in the season when the nights were long, and as we put on the lights in our store, one morning before daylight, a mob gathered with guns and stones and stormed the windows. So it was that just a few months after I took pity on my poor cousin's estrangement from his homeland, I found myself in America in the same house with him. It was a great disappointment at first, no, not lesser than Joseph's of old, but what a favor at last. Yahweh blessed the mob. Only Yahweh knows the future, and we should place our hopes and ambitions in His mighty hand. Then and then only will we come to the top, and if we are tempted to say we will or will not do this or that, then let us remember Jonah. He said he would not bury message to Nineveh, and straightway took a boat for Tarshish. But the boatman threw him overboard, and the great fish picked him up and brought him right back to the place whence he was trying to run away. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, thought to perpetuate his kingdom by ordering all his subjects to bow down to his golden image. The three Hebrews, though, defied his purpose and changed the course of history. The men who threw the Hebrews into the fiery furnace were themselves burned to death, but not a hair of the Hebrews' heads was singed all the time they remained inside the fiery furnace. Let us with some psalmists lift up our voices and say, in Psalms 8:1-6, O Yahshua, our Savior, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heaven. Out of the mouth of babes and sucklings hast thou ordained strength because of thine enemies, that thou mightest still the enemy and the avenger. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with the glory and honor. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet. The prophet Malachi was instructed to write for the people that were to live in the time of the end. Let us read from chapter 4, Malachi 4, 1-3. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith Yahshua the host, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall, and ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet. And the day that I shall do this, saith Yahshua the host, is it not better to be a human being in Yahweh's order, a beautiful, ever-living creature, than to be ashes under the soles of the saints? Why not now respond to his call and make life what it ought to be? Malachi 4:4-6. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb, for all Israel, for the statutes in judgment. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers unto the children, and the heart of the children unto their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. This is where we're at right now. Are you waiting, watching, praying, and hoping that when this antitypical Elijah, the prophet, appears and calls on you, your heart be turned towards your children, and their hearts towards you, or are you crawling under your shell, as it were, for fear that you be deceived if you should meet him? Life, you see, is what you make it. Most people do not know how to make it better. But if you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. To summarize this study, we have learned that we have been put in this world for a purpose. That if we want salvation and blessings, we must cooperate with Yahweh. This we can do by following the examples of Yahweh's truth-hungering people. To enable us to do this, he has seen to it that both the glories and calamities of both classes have been noted in his book. If we compare our works with Noah's works, we will see whether we measure up with him in obeying the present truth. Neither the antediluvians nor the post-diluvians did profit from the Noah's preaching. For the former did not believe it possible to flood the earth and perish. The latter did not believe it possible for the earth not to be flooded again. They built the Tower of Babel because they feared another flood, although they were plainly told that there will be such a flood no more. Yahweh, though, not only destroyed their work, but also confounded their language, and in exchange gave them all different languages so that few could understand one another. If we were to fulfill Yahweh's plans for us, we shall never be confused or confounded. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, at last saw these things as Yahweh sees them. But he put the hard way, not because Yahweh turned him loose for 7 years to eat grass like the oxen. Later, when he came to himself, he acknowledged Yahweh as the Yahweh who rules both heaven and earth. Let us do better than did the king. Then Belshazzar, the king who failed to profit by the experience of Nebuchadnezzar, overnight lost himself, his kingdom, and his all. Ruler followed ruler, and finally the kingdom passed to the Medo-Persians, then to the Grecians, next to the Romans, and finally to the nations of today. The nations, you see, belong to Yahweh, and he lets them be ruled by whomsoever he will. And that's today Donald Trump is ruling the nations, and typical Cyrus of the Medes and the Persians today. The nations who came nearest to Yahweh and his teachings became great and respectable nations, and those who kept themselves away from him are not much better than animals. It is best to learn what Yahweh wants you to do Now, then do just that. Life is truly, it's just what we make it, no less and no more. Now is your chance. Now you are at the two crossroads, which will be for you, the wide or the narrow, which? This man in verse 36, our contest at the 11th hour call, that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. We've come to the end of timely greetings number 50. Who at my door standing? At my door is standing, patiently drawing near, and trust within this minding, is there a voice I hear? Sweetly the tongue has fallen, open the door for me. If ever is my calling, I will abide with thee. All through the dark hours dreary, knocking again is he. Joshua, thou not weary, waiting so long for me. Sweetly the tongues of falling, open the door for me. If ever he's my calling, I will abide with thee. Door of my heart I hasten, even I hope and wide. Though he rebukes and chastens, he shall with me abide. Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door for me. If thou heed my calling, I will abide with thee.